This is Fresh Air. I'm Tanya Mosley. We're wrapping up the 50th anniversary of hip-hop by looking back at some of our most memorable interviews with performers who hold a significant place in history. Our first interview is with RZA, the chief composer and producer of the Wu-Tang Clan, which has often been called one of the most revolutionary rap groups of the mid-90s. They turned the concept of a hip-hop crew inside out by creating a collective of 9 MCs who also created their own music under different pseudonyms. RZA is also known as Prince Rakim, Bobby Digital, the Resurrector, and Robert Diggs, which is his birth name. He joined his cousins, GZA the Genius, and Old Dirty Bastard in 1992 to form the Wu-Tang Clan. Martial arts movies had a big influence on RZA growing up. The name Wu-Tang Clan was inspired by kung fu movies and a mythical martial sword technique. RZA also composed music for several films, including Jim Jarmusch's Ghost Dog, as well as Kill Bill and its sequel, directed by Quentin Tarantino. Recently, RZA was one of the executive producers of the Hulu series Wu-Tang, An American Saga, which chronicled the rise of the group. The third and final season wrapped up in April. Terry Gross spoke with RZA in 2005 after the release of his book, The Wu-Tang Manual. We start with a single, Cream, from the Wu-Tang's 1993 debut album.
I grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side. Staying alive was no job, had second hands. Moms bounced on old men, so then we moved to Shaolin land. A young youth, you're rocking the gold tooth. Low goose, only way I begin to G-York was drug loot. And let's start it like this, son. This one and that one, pulling out gats for fun. But it was just a dream for the team who was a fiend. Started smoking rules at 16 and running up in gates and doing hits by high stakes, making my way off fire skates. No question, I was speed for cracks and weed. The combination made my eyes bleed. No question, I would flow off and try to get the door.
That's the Wu-Tang Clan. My guest is the RZA. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, y'all.
Now, you know, in addition to being, you know, an MC and to being one of the rappers with Wu-Tang Clan, you were also the chief producer and arranger. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, composing and sampling the music backing for the records? Like, what your approach is to that?
Well, my musical knowledge really came from being a DJ. You know, at the age of 11, I got my first pair of turntables, straight arm techniques, you know what I mean? The hardest ones that you could scratch on. And I was in, building up an extensive record collection. Even as a DJ with a four-track, my production style was similar to the style you hear on 36 Chambers, which was taking something from old soul music to something from a funky drum, you know, whether James Brown or Willie Mitchell-type drum pattern, and then come with maybe a Woody Woodpecker record, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then mix that in with some kind of classical. So I was a kind of DJ that would do that. When I would DJ at parties, you know, when I would interlude between records, I may throw on a Peter Pan quote or something and then throw on a crazy hip-hop gutter beat that makes the crowd go crazy. So when I start producing, I had that same approach.
So were you, you know, since you had such a wide variety of musical records that you were drawing from, were any of those records things that you first heard from your parents' record collections?
Oh, guaranteed. I mean, you know, it's, everything started from what our parents had, of course.
So what was in your parents' collection?
Oh, my parents had all the soul records from, you know, from I had a single mother most of the time, but from the Crusaders to the OJs to the Delphonics to the Temptations, you know what I mean? All the way to Kenny Rogers was in the crate, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was my mother was, being a single mother, I guess she probably went through a lot of different feelings and changes. And she had a lot of different artists and records that she would play, you know, over the years. But what made my selection and collection so ill was, it wasn't only my parents' records. I was taking everybody's parents' records, you know what I mean? I went to Inspector Deckhouse and his mother had a whole closet full of old records that she gave me. Ghostface Moms, I mean, people that be in New York City in the village just selling records on the street corner. I mean, I'm the kind of kid that buys everything. I used to buy records everywhere, anywhere, no matter what. And I'm still kind of like that, you know. I've collected records from over probably 40 different countries.
Let's talk a little bit about how you started composing. because you know you first were DJing basically. You were sampling things from records and playing records under raps, but you actually compose now. So how did you make that transition?
That was pretty something that came to being. I think around 1995, 96. You know, I had a few platinum records under my belt already. I was getting worldwide recognition and really a lot of praises from the music industry and community about what I did, what I've done, the sound that I was bringing to the table. But I took a look and was like, you know what? Wow, I'm considered a famous musician, but technically, as far as terminology, I'm not a musician because there's no instrument that I could really say I could play. And so I kind of felt like I'm one of the kind of people that like to be part of a fraternity because he earned it. And so I took the time out to start reading books on the music theory and studying chord progressions and the way things should be. Because I always heard it, you know what I mean? Always heard it, you know, by listening to songs or if you listen to some of my samples. When hip hop was only doing one loop samples or maybe two bar samples, I came with the four bars or I came with you know, sample changes, you know, as if I played it, you know what I mean? I was able to take, you know, three different parts from one song and make it become, you know, an intro, a verse, and a chorus. So I had the song structure and arrangement always in my mind, but I had to use other people's music. But around 1996, I decided to start studying the theory and being able to make my own progressions and make my own phrases of music. And that's what started leading into me being a composer. You know, I always sampled stuff that was similar to that anyway, and so I wanted to learn how to play it myself, how to express it myself. And I think in 1997 on the Wu-Tang Forever album, you first hear me doing things like that. You listen to songs like Triumph, and you hear how the strings, you know, they come in, they have, you know, they have a, you know, it's played staccato, but it's a rise to it. So it's like dun 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 chun 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 chun. It rises up and then they drop out, and then the voice will come in, and then that'll drop out. Then you just hit a guitar hit with the piano. So that was like doing 97 is when I started experimenting with the theory of music, chord progressions, and things like that, mixed with my sample DJ background. And that's how I produced Wu-Tang Forever.
Well, let's hear Triumph from Wu-Tang Forever. Here it is.
I bomb atomically. Socrates' philosophies and hypotheses. Can't define how I be dropping these mockeries. Lyrically perform armed robbery. Flee with the lottery. Possibly they spotted me. Battle scarred shogun. Explosion when my pen hits. Tremendous. Ultraviolet shine blind forensics. I inspect view through the future. See millennium. Killer bees sold 50 gold, 60 platinum. Shackling the matches with drastic rap tactics. Graphic displays melt the steel like blacksmiths. Black Wu-Tang. Jackets, Queen Bees, ease the gunson. Rumbling with patrolmen, tear gas, lace the function. Heads by the score, take flight inside a war. Ticks hit the floor, die hard fans demand more. Behold the bold soldier, control the glow slowly. Proceeds the blow, swinging swords like Shinobi. Stomp grounds and found footprints in solid rock. Who got it locked, performing live on your hottest fly.
As the world turns, I spread like germ. Bless the globe with the pestilence. The hard-headed never learned. It's my testament to those burned. Play my position in the game of life, standing firm. On foreign land, jump the gun out the frying pan. Into the fire, transform into the Ghost Rider. A six-pack and a street car named Desire.
That's Triumph from the album Wu-Tang Forever. And my guest is the RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan, also a solo artist. You know, you do something on some of your music that I think you call a detuned piano. And listening to it, I never knew whether it was an electric piano or what, but it has this really distinctive sound. And in fact, I want to play something from the Jim Jarmusch movie, Ghost Dog: The Way of the Samurai. And you did the score for this movie, and it's really,
yeah, that was my first score.
Yeah, and it's really wonderful. Let me play the theme from it. That That's music from the Jim Jarmusch movie, Ghost Dog, The Way
Ghost
of
Dog.
The Samurai, composed by my guest, the RZA. What are you doing on that? What's the keyboard that we're hearing?
The keyboard that I use for Ghost Dog, I use a combination, but I use mostly, it's a keyboard called the Kurzweil 2500, and there's another keyboard called the Insonic ASR-10. And the ASR-10 is a sampling keyboard. The Kurzweil is also a sampling keyboard, but it's made with this thing they call VAS technology, which is Variable Architect Synthesis Technology. And that means that this particular keyboard can emulate any other keyboard ever created. If you just use the filters and play with the filters,
mm-hmm.
it can emulate any other keyboard and potentially any instrument if you know the proper parameters. And the Ghost Dog theme, the doo-doo, it sounds like it was a partial of a flute sample, just taken out just one frequency of it, and then played across the piano. So that was how I came up with that right there, mixed in with some muddy string pads, you know what I mean, and a muddy string guitar sample. Da-na-na-na. So it was a pretty awkward combination, but the sound of it is funny. When I made that particular song, the sound of it was to go along with Ghost Dog. Had a lot of birds in this movie, you know. And reading, studying music, I read about Peter and the Wolf and how the composer used an instrument to reflect each animal. For instance, when the wolf came, he threw on the trombones. When the bird came, he threw on the flute. So this is why on the Ghost Dog theme, you hear that flute in there, because he had a lot of birds, and when the movie first came on, the bird was flying. So I started with that flute sound, so you could feel that joyfulness. But it's also put into a RZA context. So it was joy mixed with sorrow and morbid.
Morbidity, did you say? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's something very eerie about the theme.
That's what I mean. I think I meant eerie. Then, if morbid and eerie don't mean the same thing. Do they mean the same thing? Morbid
no.
and eerie?
Well, eerie is kind of mysterious, and morbid has to do with death, but I think it's both, because the movie has a lot to do with death.
Right. Well, I'll say eerie then, and morbid, because I wanted to be like the spirituality of the bird, but also to capture like the internal of Ghost Dog. You know what
yeah,
I mean? He's
yeah.
a very troubled individual, really.
So you use the word detuned. What do you mean by detuned, and what is detuned in the music register?
When a piano gets old, right, and it sits in your studio for a long time, it becomes detuned. Meaning, you know, all the notes are maybe not a half step, but maybe a 1/8 of a step just out of tune mm-hmm. in the proper chromatic order. And I like that sound. You know, most people come in and go, I need to tune the keyboard, or I need to tune your piano, or tune your guitar. I like it when it's detuned, because that means it's not in the musical harmony according to the theory of music, but yet it has a harmony of its own. And that's something that I use a lot throughout whether I sample the sound or whether I played it. That's the sound I use a lot.
And I think one of the reasons why that works when you do it is because you're often using like one note lines. So
exactly.
There aren't like chords that you're playing, because the chords might sound really raggy, but that single note line it works
it
really well.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like a person that sings that doesn't really that's vocal trained. He'd be able to he'll be able to sing and give you all the feelings he want to give you, but he may not be able to sing in the key of A, you know. But he'll be able to sing a song that's in the key of A, and just because of if he has a natural style and a good flow, it'll just somehow mesh all together. I think that's what hip-hop singing is, you know, like a lot of hip-hop artists that sing.
Right.
You hear some of these songs, I know, like, people hear it on the radio, like, how is this song on the radio? Or even one of the great hip-hop R&B singers, Mary J. Blige, in her early career, a lot of, you know, trained musicians was like, oh, Mary's always out of tune, or... But the hip hop generation loved it because it was no sound like that. His only sound was her, you know.
You've had several personas over the years. I mean, your birth name is Robert Diggs. You're known as the RZA. That's a name you took when you co-founded the Wu-Tang Clan. Mm-hmm. You're also Bobby Digital, and early in your career, you were Prince Rakim. So let's start with Prince Rakim. I mean, who what did you see that persona as being? The music that you made with him is different from Wu-Tang.
I would say so. Well, Prince Rakim, you know what I mean? I was basically more of a student in the studies of life, shall I say, and as well as definitely a student to music and the music industry and things like that. But as Prince Rakim, you know, being young, 17, 18 years old, you know, all you think about is girls, yo. You know what I mean? And I was, you know, pretty popular guy with the girls. Like, you know, a lot of girls found, you know, had good things to say about me. Oh, he's cute, and he always got on some polo and Gucci, and he's just, you know. And I actually like to carry myself like a prince. I was the kind of kid that, you know, kept his fingernails right. You know what I mean? Wouldn't touch my food without a napkin, and, you know, walked like Mr. Spock, had my hands behind my back. I used to walk very straight up and very, very elegant, you know what I mean? That's how I felt, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I probably had about 30 different polo suits that I got, you know, because we had many ways to make hustles back then. But every day I'll come out with a new suit on. You may see me wear a powder blue polo suit with a gold chain, you know, gold teeth. And just something real fly, you know what I mean? And that was kind of the persona of Prince Rakim. He was definitely a fly guy, as the word was back in those days.
Why don't we hear a 1991 record that you made as Prince Rakim, and this is "Ooh, I Love You, Rakim."
Oh no! Okay, let's go for it. Come on.
Okay.
It seems I'm a fiend for a sex routine. Love to hit 'em scream.
Ooh, Rakim.
And my response is oh, always satisfied 'em. You know how I flow. With sex, I'm not lazy. I'm buck wild and crazy. I kiss the bosoms, but never eat the daisies. And my ladies love me deeply because I'm handsome, charming, and freaky. And when they meet me, they won't go. And now I'm stuck.
Okay, so let's move from Prince Rakim to the RZA. How does the RZA compare to Prince Rakim?
Well, when I came with Wu-Tang Clan, and the first single was called "Protect Your Neck," and you'll notice in the video, it's like exit Prince Rakim and enter the RZA, because there was no time for me to be a pretty boy. It was no time for me to be this elegant guy that was, you know, into the ladies and into how I dressed and into how I looked. I became the RZA, basically, which was a total rebel, really. You know what I mean? You know, somebody that had it with society, and that was coming to get his fair take of society. You notice when I came in as the RZA, I was, you know, came very militant in my look. I was very militant in my action. I just went through so much different personal traumas, as far as with the law, with my life, with people in the streets, the hood, and I basically made a Z. You know what I mean? I made the first curve in my Z, shall I say, And I was like, you know, I'm not longer Prince, no longer Prince Rakim. That's part of my attribute, but I'm going to be the RZA. You know what I mean? Because, you know, that means I was strictly dealing with focusedness. It's funny because I didn't even like care how I dressed. I didn't even change my clothes that often. You know what I mean? I just was this one focused individual that was built on making a legacy for himself. And the Z in mathematics, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I study mathematics. And the Z stands for zigzag zig, which represents knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. It means, like, you can go this way, and sometimes you're going to have to zag back because you're going to go back and check on yourself. But then you realize you was going the right way in the beginning, so you zig again. And that shows you that sometimes you may know something, and you can understand it, but if you don't live through it, you know, it's not fully understood by you. And so that zag is me living it out. And when I zagged, you know, I went through so much troubles of life and life experiences. So now I have the experience. So now I have to zig again. And that's what really put that Z in my name. I was like, you know what? I don't went this way or that way. And now I understand which way I got to walk. And I actually walked a very straight, narrow line from the day that I took that title to RZA. I didn't really, commit sins or just, I was a real straightforward, focused, determined individual. And I gave myself a 5-year period, you know what I mean, of to make sure I stayed on that path. And that's what I did.
And after the 5 years?
Well, after the 5 years, which I basically had took that name in 1992. And then by 1997, my idea was I'll be on the top that musically, you know, and what I stood for would be the top in the world. And I think in 1997 it happened. I think in 1997 Wu-Tang made it made a number one record or something like that. It was the number one hip-hop group, number one selling hip-hop group at the time, you know, nominated for Grammys and all that, you know, and really the number one influential groups at that time. So it actually kind of came to fruition from that five-year plan.
Well, I really want to thank you so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan speaking with Terry Gross in 2005.